From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 7th day of January, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. We'll check in on the agricultural news for the afternoon, and we'll take up the weather forecast, too. That with Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather in Chicago on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online and listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago today, corn futures finished a penny lower at $4.94 a bushel for the lead March. May contract at $4.95.5, down a half, and December of next year at $4.41, a quarter of a cent lower. March soybeans at $13.55.25, down 6.25. May $13.53.75, 6.5 lower. Next year's November in the soybeans, $11.53, down a quarter of a cent. The bean meal, $6.10 lower at $432.20, that per ton. And the bean oil at $43.79, down 5 cents for the day. Wheat futures soft red in the March contract at $6.42.25, down 5.25 for the day, and the hard red at $5.98.5, down a nickel on the afternoon. Taking a look at the meat market for the day, live cattle futures finished the nearby contract a 2.5 lower at $114.97.5, and the feeders were down rather up 92.5 cents. They settled at $136.70. Lean hogs for the day at $69.12.5, down 65 cents on the afternoon. Some of the energies trading the crude oil for the day at $50.81 a barrel, 19 cents higher, and the U.S. Diesel fuel at $1.53.07. That's just about unchanged to 0.9 cents higher. And the gasoline on the RBOB at $1.48.04. That's up 9.7 cents. You're listening to Illinois Public Media. Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net now joins us to take a look at what happened in Chicago for this Thursday. Hey, Matt, thanks for being with us today. Tell me about the trade in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look, basically the overnight market wasn't super active, but then you get later stages of the overnight, you know, and then you look and corn was down at one time, 7.75, you know, and beans down double digits, and it looked like it might be a really rough day. You know, the markets tried to rally a little bit before export sales were announced, and actually export sales on corn were, you know, they were decent, 700,000-800,000 tons, but then soybeans, we just didn't see much. And so definitely on soybeans, there was a little concern. You know, I think that people are maybe a little bit frustrated with the kind of number what we saw there, and then we were right back down fairly strong. But then during the you know, during the difference between the overnight and the day session on the closure there, you know, we came up with a couple of morning announcements. And so, you know, 213,000 and you know, 130,000 of soybeans for next marketing year. A nice surprise announcements, and quite frankly, we don't have room for a whole lot more surprise purchases off of us. So it's a very tight situation with soybeans, and you know, it gave us a chance. So we finally rallied back after a really, really ugly day for most of the day.
And so you said it's a tight situation for soybeans. Are there expectations from the trade that next week's USDA report, and the World Agricultural Supply Demand Estimate in particular, will tighten up the supplies again?
Yeah. And so if you look, you know, for instance, on Reuters, you know, the corn basically average carry out, I think, is right around 1.6, soybeans around 1.40. And so, you know, I think that most traders would suggest that it's tighter than 1.40. They just don't feel like we'll print a number much below that at the present time. Me and the guys that I'm with Ag Market, you know, we're at 145 million bushels as far as soybeans are concerned. So we're very close to the average trade guess. As far as corn's concerned, we're a little bit lower, around a 1.5, whereas the trade's around 1.6. And so, yeah, I think that if you get much above 1.5 or even 1.6 or over on corn, it's probably not going to be a good day. Whereas on soybeans, I think it's anyone's guess as to how tight the USDA, I mean, I think they could make a case for a sub 100. I just don't think they'll do it. I think a big, big thing next Tuesday is going to be, what's production? Are they going to touch production for this last fall? Because most people feel like they should cut it. I just don't think they have much room to cut.
Do you think lead option corn in that $4.95 range is high enough given the number you're thinking we'll have for ending stocks?
You know, it probably is if we're at a 1.6. You know, I think if you're down to 1.5 or below, you probably have cause to rally this market a little bit more because there's still several unknowns. As you know, for instance, Argentina, you know, the forecasts keep changing, but bottom line, most people down there feel like that crop's been hurt. Brazil, there's a lot of unknowns. When's that spring crop going to be planted? Are they going to have enough moisture to get it by? You know, if you don't have really good production out of South America, considering the kind of demand that we've seen for this corn, for me, I guess I struggle to think that we're going to slow it down right off the bat. Now, I think a producer has to understand, though, whenever you've got elevator systems in this part of the world bidding 25 and 30 over, when you're a nickel shy of $5, you got to pay attention to that because that's not something that we've enjoyed for many years. And, you know, taking a little risk off the table there is probably an advisable thing to do.
Let's stay with corn. New crop sales advised at all?
Yeah, I mean, we're up to 30%. You know, we sold some corn this week, 439 basis to Dece. You know, we closed today at 441, 441 and a half, somewhere right in there. I don't know where the settlement's going to end up being. But, you know, I like making a sale this close to 450. Are we going to get above 450? Yeah, probably. I think that you're going to have really big corn acreage on your planting intentions, in my opinion, to really hurt this market in the long run. Now, could we scale back and then come back up? Yeah, I think we probably could, but you've got a pretty tight situation when you're talking a 1.5, 1.6, and God forbid that we go tighter than that. So if you cut production again next week, there's no doubt, in my opinion, that you could be seeing this fall corn market rally substantially more. And so if I get too aggressive on new crop sales, I kind of like covering that with a, you know, like a May short dated call or something to at least keep me in the game if this market continues to rip higher.
We talked earlier in the growing marketing season, that is, about an acreage war for 2021 as it relates to soybeans. Do you think we've rallied enough in November soybeans to make that complete?
Boy, it sure, you know, it sure is making the case with 1153, you know, basis the board. I mean, right now, you know, the corn and soybean situation tells me that soybeans are going to try really, really hard to keep those acres. And so, you know, looking at the current ratio, I mean, it's a pretty stout 2.62 to 1, and so that's pretty tough to ignore. And so, you know, I mean, then you look over, for instance, at some of your smaller players, whether you talk wheat or cotton. You know, wheat's above $6 for July. You know, clear up there at 636. You know, and then you got $80 cotton. So, you know, they're not really going away. I think that they're trying to stay in the game. And so, I don't know. I think that the bean market at 1153 is probably getting it close to 90 million acres, maybe a shade above. But again, a lot of that's going to depend on how much of that prevent plant acreage is going to come back into the mix. I think you'll get a ton of fringe acres this year because we've seen profit margins creep back in, you know, and then it's just going to be a little bit of a late season tug of war between corn and beans on a more limited amount of acres, I want to add, because there's a lot of fall tillage that got done this last year, and I do think there's a fair amount of anhydrous that went on across the country.
Hey, thanks so much.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett. He's with AgMarket.net. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. He'll return this afternoon on the website, probably after about 6 o'clock this evening, maybe before that, as long as I can get Commodity Week posted. Matt, along with Ellen Dearden, Aaron Curtis, and Jordan Fife, who's an ethanol trader, will join us to take a look at the marketplace and look forward in our Commodity Week program at next week's USDA reports. Those are due out on Tuesday morning. The final crop production figures for the 2020 growing season, and of course, the World Agricultural Supply Demand Estimates, and the wheat acreage numbers as well. That all is next week on Tuesday, but we'll discuss it today during our Commodity Week program. You can hear that program right here tomorrow on Illinois Public Media or tonight at willag.org, willag.org. In today's agricultural news, President-elect Joe Biden's pick to lead the Environmental Protection Agency, or US EPA, met with farm group leaders Tuesday. Michael Regan, the EPA administrator designate, hosted a virtual roundtable with more than 16 members of the Ag CEO Council and staff. The Biden transition team says Regan reiterated President-elect Joe Biden's commitment to working with agricultural leaders to promote healthy and secure food supplies, clean air, and clean water. They also discussed how the incoming Biden-Harris administration wants to work closely with farmers to find practical common sense solutions to environmental challenges, and discussed how the incoming administration can create jobs and expand economic opportunities in rural communities through the Build Back Better plan, and to harness the ingenuity of farmers and ranchers to promote clean air, energy, and tackle climate change. The meeting included the American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duvall, along with leadership from the American Soybean Association, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, National Pork Producers Council, and the National Corn Growers Association. Speaking of which, the CEO of the National Corn Growers Association has been in Washington for more than three decades, and he says he's never seen a better outreach to agriculture than he's expecting with the Biden team.
I came to Washington back in February of 1988. Ronald Reagan was president. I've seen administrations come. I've seen them go. I've never seen an outreach from any administration to agriculture like I've seen with this incoming administration. I think that's a really good sign.
And John Doggett says the EPA designate reached out to him before the holidays.
Secretary Regan from North Carolina called me before Christmas one evening. Completely out of the blue, surprised me completely. And we had a very good conversation. We talked about the RFS. We talked about climate change. We talked about the need for agriculture, production agriculture, to continue to have the tools and the technologies available to us in order for us to be sustainable now and sustainable into the future.
Doggett says he stressed the importance of renewable fuels to the entire rural economy in a Zoom conference Michael Regan had with the Ag CEO Council this week. And Doggett told Regan he hopes any carbon credit system devised by the administration and Congress will benefit the producer directly.
And the important part of that is to make sure that the producer on the ground who is doing those good practices, they are the ones who benefit from whatever kind of program comes forward. We want to make sure that farmers get those payments, not some conglomerate that is playing these credits on some other market around the world.
That's National Corn Growers Association CEO John Doggett. North Carolina's Michael Regan must be approved by the Senate before taking office as administrator of the United States Environmental Protection Agency. And finally today, a majority of farmers and farm workers say the COVID-19 pandemic has impacted their mental health, that according to a new American Farm Bureau Federation poll. The results announced Wednesday find more than half of respondents say they are personally experiencing more mental health challenges than they were a year ago. The survey of rural adults and farmers and farm workers explores how the pandemic has affected their mental health personally and their communities. The survey also explored how attitudes and experiences around mental health have changed in rural and farm communities since AFBF conducted its first rural mental health survey in 2019. Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall says, "My takeaway from this survey is that the need for support is real, and we must not allow lack of access or a too tough to need help mentality to stand in the way." The survey of 2,000 rural adults was conducted by Morning Consult in December. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You know, USDA, in the December Hogs and Pigs report, made a downward revision to the past market hog inventories. When you couple this with the smallest breeding herd since early 2018 and the largest decline in the breeding herd since 2014, it makes a pretty good difference. Jason Franken of Western Illinois University says pork producers now have a bullish market in front of them because of the numbers.
All except for the heaviest weight class of market hog inventories are down compared to the same time last year, which is bullish news.
And bullish because it appears the market-ready hog supply is smaller than anticipated. Overall, Franken says the number of hogs weighing less than 180 pounds, nearly 2.5% smaller than last year. Those are the hogs expected for processing from January to May.
Taking all this into account, there is the possibility of profitable hog prices, especially throughout the summer of 2021.
In general, hog prices tend to be higher in the second and third quarters of any given year, with lower prices in the first and fourth quarters. Consistent with that pattern, here is the Western Illinois Ag Economist's price forecast. First quarter prices at about $69 and a quarter for 100 weight, rising to $72.38 in the second and third quarters at $78.72, respectively, before dropping to $67.75 a hundred weight in the fourth quarter. Now, Jason Franken says the projections assume the strong demand observed even in the face of COVID-19 is maintained. However, if that's not the case, or if the hog supply turns out to be larger than anticipated, then lower prices still may be realized. On this Thursday, let's take a look at what happened in the agricultural weather for the last week or so. And forward, we'll do that with Mike Tenura, T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Mike, thanks for being with us today. Glad you're doing well there in Chicago. Can you tell me about the weather forecast and what's happened, actually, in your opinion, from Argentina through the growing regions of South America into Brazil?
Sure, that sounds great. Let's start out with Argentina. They saw some decent rainfall in far southern growing areas over the last 2 days, so soil moisture has improved in parts of Buenos Aires. As we move forward, we do need more rain because as you head to the north from there, a lot of areas were still drier than normal over the last 1 to 2 months and even over the last 3 months. A couple of cool fronts are going to move through next week, and that will turn them a little wetter. So the story won't be quite as pronounced a week from now as it is today, with us needing rain. The concern we have, though, is that once we get beyond next week, we can see that another surface level high will pass. That will turn all areas much drier later on this month. And that makes rainfall over the next 7 to 8 days pretty important. Because if the rains verify, then the week of drying that follows later on this month won't be all that big of a concern because we could still see rain later in January and then in February, and that would take away some of the potential problems. But if rains over the next week aren't all that great, then that just makes the drying period that follows much more critical and much more of a feature to monitor. So basically, we're kind of riding the edge in Argentina where it's a little bit dry. There is some rain in the forecast, but we're still going to need to see more later on this month, no matter what happens, just based on what we can see.
As you go northward from there through Uruguay, Paraguay, into the southern parts of Brazil, I think you can talk about those as one set maybe, and then the center west as well.
Sure, that sounds great. The story, particularly across Brazil, has been one of where it was extremely dry over the first half of the growing season, especially across the northern half of the soybean belt. Those areas of the center west that you asked about, and then heading into the northern areas, which only produce about 10 to 15% of the soybeans in the north, they've all been very dry over the last 2 to 3 months, although it has been raining a little bit here and there over the last 2 to 4 weeks. So the story there is a little bit muddled, where if you just look at rainfall over the last 30 days, you would say that it is still a little bit dry over that period of time, but not nearly as great as what it was 30 to 60 days ago. But if you take a step back and look at it over the last 2 to 3 months, you would still say there is clearly a drought in place in these areas. And we'll have to wait and see a little bit longer how that affects yields and if it did affect yields, because we'll start harvesting over the next, say, 3 to 6 weeks, and we need rains to show up pretty soon again, or we're just going to have to be talking about this same story for the rest of the growing season. Now, it is going to turn wetter in these areas next week. There's not a whole lot of rain in the forecast this week, but next week it does turn a lot wetter. One thing you need to keep in mind, and I know we talk about this a lot, but 5 to 5.5 inches of rain is pretty typical of the next 2 weeks in these areas. and we're not looking for quite that much. We're looking for anywhere from 2 to 4 inches in the north, and then 3 to 6 inches in the central areas. And so it won't totally take away the story that we're talking about, which is where it is raining. It's not wiping out drought, but it is raining. And so we'll have to see how soybeans in particular respond to that. Now, off to the south, which you also were asking about, their story is somewhat similar in that they were very dry from September through October and then into the middle of November. But it's been raining on and off in a lot of these areas since. The only exception to that is in parts of Rio Grande do Sul. And that does include about 10 to 15% of soybeans, so it's not a state to completely ignore. Now, they don't have a whole lot of rain on the way, but it won't be hot either. And it's just kind of the same thing as what we've been talking about in all of these areas. Yes, they're getting rain. They're kind of riding the edge between it's a problem, it's not a problem. And it's going to be very interesting to see how harvest season unfolds there, because we'll start to get some of the answers to these questions, because it's just not totally clear if it's been too dry, but it's certainly clear that it hasn't been an ideally wet growing season.
Now, as you think about the weather in Brazil, particularly because it has such a long growing season, I'm wondering if persistence in the weather coming through those areas is a concern, or lack thereof rainfall, I suppose, or whether there are things that generally change at this time of year in that late January, early February that begin to give them more rainfall, or if there are things on the global scene that you can see that might bring more precipitation to those areas longer term?
Well, in southern Brazil, they're being affected by La Nina conditions, and that also extends into Argentina. And if we look back in history at this type of La Nina, most of them were drier than normal in these areas at this time of the year. So what we're seeing with the lack of rain in Argentina and then into Rio Grande do Sul is somewhat expected in this type of scenario. As you head to the north in the region where it didn't rain very much at all over the first half of the growing season, they don't typically have wide variations due to La Nina or El Nino conditions. It pretty much rains once you get into the October, and then especially in November and December, with the peak of the rainy season basically being on the 2 to 3 weeks centered on right now. So you're always going to see rain at this time of the year. It's just a matter of how much. As we move forward, we don't have a lot of reason to think that the rains are suddenly going to shut off or end, because this is the wettest time of the year, and it typically stays fairly wet going into March. So it's going to come down to whether we've seen enough rain over the last 4 weeks and then coming up over the next 2 to 4 weeks to counter what happened earlier in the growing season. But unfortunately, I don't have a great answer for you on that. I'm going to learn a lot here over the next 4 to 6 weeks once we start to see harvest reports come in, then have a better handle on it. But meteorologically speaking, there's no real reason to think that it's suddenly going to turn real wet or real dry in those areas to the north.
Hey, thank you so much for taking the time with me today. I do appreciate that, and we'll look forward to having our conversation again next week on Thursday.
Sounds great, Todd. Always a pleasure. We'll chat then.
That's Mike Tenura. He's with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Thursday afternoon. Came to you from Illinois Public Media.